Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Billboard Pop Shop podcast. I'm Keith Caulfield, Senior Director of Billboard Charts.
And I'm Katie Atkinson, Billboard's Deputy Editor Digital.
Happy post-Grammy week, if that's a thing. Ooh. Katie.
Yeah, post-Grammy day, daylight saving day, Oscar nomination morning, etc.
Oscar nominations, that's right.
Yeah, it's been an entertainment-filled weekend, to say the least.
Do you have news on that? Is that coming up in the show? Can it be?
I wasn't planning on it, but I'm happy to talk about it if you'd like.
Perfect, because I feel we'd be remiss if we didn't mention that. Good gravy.
We can mention it.
Well, you get on that, and I'll start. as always, hey, the Billboard Pop Shop podcast is your one-stop shop for all things pop on Billboard's weekly charts. In addition, you can always count on a lively discussion about the latest pop news, fun chart stats and stories, new music, and guest interviews with music stars and folks from the world of pop. Today on the show, we've got enormous, enormous chart news about how Drake once again makes chart history on the Billboard Hot 100 as he debuts at numbers 1, 2, and 3 with his latest three new songs, plus Bruno Mars and Anderson .Paak's new super duo Silk Sonic debuts in the top 10.
Plus, while everyone was watching the Grammy Awards on Sunday from home, I was one of just a few dozen reporters who covered the event from the Grammy's official virtual press room.
Ooh.
So I will be taking you, quote unquote, backstage to reveal what you did not see on TV on Sunday. But first, before we get started, if you enjoy the podcast, subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast provider so you won't miss an episode. And if you want to explore more podcasts from Billboard, visit billboard.com/podcasts.
Okay, so let's do the chart chat. On Drake's new single, What's Next, he raps, quote, "I'm on the Hot 100 numero uno," end quote. And you know what? He is. He is.
He is.
What's Next debuts at number one on the Billboard Hot 100, or the Hot 100 for the rest of us.
We're renaming it, actually.
We could just rename it that.
Yeah.
Just give Drake another part of the charts. I mean, what part does he not already own? It becomes Drake's eighth number one on the Hot 100. But he doesn't stop there, as his other two new songs, Once and Needs featuring Lil Baby and Lemon Pepper Freestyle featuring Rick Ross, debuts at number 2 and 3. Now, with those three debuts, Drake becomes the first act to debut at numbers 1, 2, and 3 concurrently, and just the third act to occupy all three spots at the same time, following Ariana Grande and The Beatles. On top of all this, Drake also extends his record for the most top tens ever on the chart, now with a total of 45 top tens.
Man, and so how did Drake himself react to the news?
I don't know. How did he react, Katie?
I'll tell you how he reacted, Keith. In a word, as he wrote on his own Instagram, where he has reposted the top 10 chart, splashy.
Splashy.
Quote unquote, splashy.
It's pretty splashy.
I mean, if ever there was the correct use of the word splashy, this is it.
I was joking a little bit internally with the rest of the charts team. I'm like, you know what? It's only going to be a matter of time before the entire top 10 are just debuts from Drake.
I'm guessing he likes the fact that the one that is just him solo is number one. That's great. And then the other two each have their own kind of narrative. For one is featuring Lil Baby, who obviously is one of the hottest new rappers right now. And the other features Rick Ross and also has kind of more of a, autobiographical tinge, he spills a little tea in there, etc. So it's everything's got like a hook, and then the one that's number one is just Drake.
Yeah.
So
well, the entire top four on the Hot 100 actually are debuts, as Bruno Mars and Anderson .Paak's super duo Silk Sonic debuts at number four with their track "Leave the Door Open." I'm sure Bruno and Anderson would have loved to have had some advance word if maybe Drake was dropping those three songs the same day as "Leave the Door Open."
Do we know where Justin Bieber is, Keith? Not to put you on the spot.
Outside the top 10, Katie.
Not in the top 10, I see.
No, Justin Bieber's new single did not debut in the top 10. It's a pretty tough week.
Clearly.
Yeah. Speaking of other songs, all this also means that Olivia Rodrigo's Driver's License, which has been number one for 8 weeks running, finally vacated the top slot. It slips to number 5 this week. Was that its last week at number one? We don't know. It could always come back.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, let's go over the numbers on Drake and Leave the Door Open, because that's what you came here for. What's Next starts with 49.1 million U.S. streams and 19,000 downloads sold in the U.S. in the week ending March 11th, according to MRC data. It also drew 11.9 million in radio airplay audience impressions in the week ending March 14th. Wants and Needs starts with 45.1 million streams, 17,000 sold, and 2.1 million in audience. And Lemon Pepper
Freestyle
starts with 32.1 million streams, 15,000 sold, and 869,000 in radio audience. Leave the Door Open, meanwhile, opens with the door open. It opens, never mind, with 23.2 million streams, 27,000 sold, and 23.5 million in airplay audience. A much bigger radio hit than any of the Drake songs, actually. But I guess that's sort of to be expected, considering Bruno Mars's profile with radio. For the full rundown of all the exciting action on the Hot 100 this week, because there's more than just what I just talked about. There's so many more things going on. Check out Hot 100 chart manager Gary Trust's story on billboard.com/chart-beat. Well, over on the Billboard 200 albums chart, the chart that I happen to manage, you'll never guess who is number one, Katie.
I don't want to play this game, Keith.
Fine.
I abstain.
Well, that's right. You guessed it. Morgan Wallen's Dangerous, the double album, is number one for a ninth straight week. It now has the most weeks at number one since, hey, look, Drake with Views back in 2016, which had 13 non-consecutive weeks at number one. Dangerous also has the most weeks in a row at number one since Views also notched its first 9 weeks at number one.
I mean, so is he going to be number one again next week, Keith?
Number one for the rest of the year, Katie.
Spoiler alert.
Actually, last Friday saw the release of some high-profile albums from the likes of Nick Jonas, Selena Gomez, and Rob Zombie, among others. And, of course, the Grammy Awards, which we're about to talk about in a second, were this past Sunday, and that could shake up the chart as well, maybe bring back a former number one back to the top of the chart. I don't know. We shall see. We shall see next week.
Indeed. And, you know, before we get into the Grammys, why don't I tell you about the Oscar nominations real quick?
Yeah, there is definitely a friend of the podcast that is nominated this year.
Well, we will start with Best Original Song. And the nominees are Fight For You from Judas and the Black Messiah, which belongs to her, who also won Song of the Year for this, a different song. It was I Can't Breathe Song of the Year, and this is Fight For You, but she co-wrote it with the same crew, actually. So they had quite the weekend. And then Hear My Voice from The Trial of the Chicago 7, which is music by Daniel Pemberton and Celeste.
Okay.
And then we have Husovic from Eurovision Song Contest, The Story of Fire Saga.
Of course.
Which is an incredible movie, and I love that they can now call themselves an Oscar-nominated movie.
Can't wait to hear you pronounce all these songwriters.
Well, I know how to do Savan Kotecha.
Yep, there we go.
Fat Max Jesus, I'm going to go with.
I'm not even sure.
And
I Googled that person the other day. I'm like, are you real? Apparently he's a real person.
And Rickard Göransson. Actually, that wasn't so hard at all. The next one is IOC, parenthetical title, Scene. And that's from The Life Ahead. That one is perennial Oscar favorite, Diane Warren.
Friend of the podcast.
And she co-wrote that with Laura Pausini, who I believe performs it and also wrote the Italian translation of the song as well.
Huh.
Next up is Speak Now from One Night in Miami. And that one is from Leslie Odom Jr., who stars in the movie as Sam Cooke and also performs the song. And he wrote that with Sam Ashworth. And those are the five songs nominated for Best Original Song.
Congrats, everybody.
Do we need to get into score? I can give you score if you'd like it.
Well, you seem to suggest that you were going to tell us score.
Okay, well, then I'll tell you score. First up is Defive Bloods, which is scored by Terrence Blanchard. Then we have Mank, which was Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross. And while we're talking about them, we will also say Soul also was nominated from Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross and John Batiste.
Wow.
Then there's Minari, which is Emil Masseri. And finally, News of the World by James Newton Howard.
What if Mank and Soul tie and Reznor and Atticus Ross somehow become double winners in the same category because they tied themselves?
Ooh, that would be a fun story. I don't see it happening.
Let's make it happen, people.
So there you have it. There's the little quick rundown on Oscar noms before we talk about the show that just transpired on Sunday, the Grammy Awards.
And you were there, sort of.
I was, yeah, let's call it there. I mean, I was actually here, exactly where I'm talking from right now in my garage. But I was in the virtual press room, which they did actually keep pretty limited as far as who was able to ask questions of people who popped in. Every winner for the night and presenter were invited to speak if they wanted to. Yes.
Okay.
Well, I mean, of course, not everyone did. And how it worked was how it works normally, which is that if you win, you have to wait for all of your categories to be read if you are nominated for other awards before you go back to the press room.
Oh.
So that was a little interesting wrinkle because at the end of the night, you know, there's kind of a log jam, you know, Dua Lipa's waiting to find out if she won Album of the Year, Record of the Year, Song of the Year, after she had already won Pop Vocal Album. So she has to decide after losing all of those top awards to then come talk to us, which she kindly did.
Oh.
So that's really great. Another friend of the podcast. We really appreciate Dua. So... and I was kind of, Keith and I really have not spoken too much about this.
No,
yet.
I purposely told Katie, don't tell me about what happened. I mean, I know that she was there and you basically started your day with the pre-telecast, the premiere ceremony that starts, I think at like 1 p.m. Pacific, maybe?
It starts at noon Pacific and we had to be in the virtual press room by 11:30 a.m. So my day started pretty early yesterday. Sunday, which also because of daylight saving time felt like 10:30.
You know, normally in any normal year, Katie and I would normally be at the actual physical ceremony that early in the day.
Yep.
Because for the past, I don't know, 8 years or something, I have been part of Billboard's red carpet coverage, which means you have to be there usually when the red carpet starts at like 11:30 or noon in the day. And Katie has to be in that press room for like a good 8 hours in a row.
So right, so that was nice. It was nice to, yes, it was much easier to take bathroom breaks and get snacks.
Yeah,
for sure. as you said, like that red carpet starts so early because for the bulk of the nominees, their awards are given out in this pre-tell ceremony, and that starts at noon. And so all of those winners who joined us in the press room after winning in the pre-tell ceremony all were coming from their homes. They were all coming from across the world. So it was very cool. Like, people just joined us from all over the place. And it was kind of like doing our meetings at work, you know, like you saw people's offices or, you know, whatever. Like, all the Strokes were gathered into one room for their Best Rock Album win.
Oh, the Strokes showed up? Oh, cool.
The Strokes showed up, yeah. Oh, right. You don't know anything, Keith.
No, I don't. I don't know anything, Katie.
And neither do our listeners. as you know, I am a country fan, so whenever there was a country act who came through, I made an effort to ask a question. So I was able to speak to Dan and Shay yesterday, who won for 10,000 Hours featuring Justin Bieber.
For best country and performance by a duo or group.
Exactly. And they're 3 for 3 in that category.
Wow.
In 3 consecutive years.
Wow.
So they've won that same award for the last 3 years running.
So they keep beating Brothers Osborne, basically.
Basically.
Yeah.
And, Little Big Town, Lady A, there's a million country groups.
Wait. Oh, I thought they were all, you know, they all won something too. No, they didn't. Never mind.
You know, I'm telling you, like, those people already or always put those, you know, great songs out too. But Dan and Shay, 3 years in a row. So I got to ask them a question, and I asked them about... just kind of getting to celebrate this song and when they might be able to actually celebrate in person with their collaborator since they haven't really gotten... They said they didn't really even get to celebrate it going number one with him yet. You know, like they're just waiting to hang out with Justin Bieber.
Hope they FaceTimed Justin last night. Jeez.
Yes. And then I also spoke to Billy Strings. Are you familiar with him?
No.
He he's like a bluegrass guy, but he's a young guy in kind of a, you know, older dominated field. Very talented. And he actually, he's done some music recently with Luke Combs that's gotten a lot of attention. So he was fun to talk to. And then I was talking about people winning awards earlier in the night, that they were all coming from home, but then shifting to the telecast. The first winner from the telecast to talk to the press room was Kate Trinata, who had been nominated for Best New Artist. Once that nomination went to Megan Thee Stallion, he was able to talk to us because he won two dance awards in the pre-tell ceremony.
I see.
So that was the first person who like actually beamed in live from downtown Los Angeles. All of a sudden there was a step and repeat. You know, there was a guy handing him a microphone. There was professional cameras. It fully switched at that point.
So question, how did they, so normally the way it works in the press room, because I've actually sat in that press room possibly with you.
Yes.
I can't even remember, how do they figure out in a normal setting who gets to ask the question? And then comparatively, how do they do that for the virtual event?
Yeah, I mean, in the room, you literally stand yourself up and walk to a microphone. There's two microphone stands on the left and right-hand side of the room, and it's kind of a race to see who gets to it first. In this situation, we've all used the raise hand function on Zoom, so we were doing that, but then you were at the mercy of, you know, whether the moderator called on you, because they were in charge of muting and unmuting you, so it wasn't a free-for-all.
So they could see what outlet you were with, and...
Yes,
maybe
we actually had to all change
with the
artist. We had to change our Zoom names to first name outlet, so they knew who everybody was.
Katie,
yeah,
at Billboard.
Exactly.
Got it.
So, in the main telecast, the first person I got to ask a question of was Miranda Lambert.
Oh, amazing!
Super excited about that, and she specifically won for Best Country Album, which is an award she'd won before. And I just asked her whether it was, you know, extra meaningful to win for a full body of work like that. And she went into a whole thing. She's like, I'm an album artist. I love making albums. Like, you know, this is still super, like, she's like, this signifies a time in my life. Like when I put out an album, it's helping me get through a time in my life. And it's telling the story of a time in my life. So they're like little time capsules of my life. Hmm. So it was a really great answer to that question.
She went for Wild Card is the name of the album, by
yes,
the way.
She did.
And she performed she performed the album's Bluebird on the show, I believe.
Yep. So she won the award for Best Country Album on the telecast, came backstage, talked to us, and then went out and performed Bluebird. That was the chronology of that. Which
How
when
weird.
She popped back, I'm like, I can see the run of show. And I can see she still hasn't performed. And I'm like, oh, damn, she's going to go back out there and perform after this. Like, so what a pro.
That's
to
unusual.
Do the press first. Yeah.
I would have assumed that they would have had because there was three country performances on the show. Mickey Guyton, Miranda Lambert, and Maren Morris all in a row. And I thought they would have, I missed that part of the show. They made the country album thing before that on the show?
Oh, yeah. It was much
Weird.
Before that. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Probably like 45 minutes before that. Yeah.
Huh. Mm-hmm. All right.
That was, you should go back and watch that string of performances, though. It's very cool the way they made them kind of fluid. And
oh, I
then
did
they
see those
showed,
three. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, good. They showed all the ladies, like, you know, singing along to each other's songs, like off to the side of the stage. I thought that was really cool.
As a general aside,
yes.
Not to sort of disrupt your flow here.
No.
But, folks, if you haven't seen the Grammy Awards, it was done differently than every other music award show that we've seen during the pandemic. And a lot of the performances were kind of staged in a quasi in the round scenario where you felt like they truly were live and happening on Sunday. And it felt live. It felt exciting. Mm-hmm. It felt like anything could happen. And it was also cool to see like the artists watching each other, because Harry Styles opened the show with Watermelon Sugar, and then they segued to Billie Eilish doing Everything I Wanted. And you saw Harry watching Billie across the room, like literally across the room in the same room together. It was pretty cool.
Well, and most memorably, you got to see Post Malone watching Cardi B and Megan Thee Stallion live.
Yeah.
Which is, and so everyone was just, Post Malone was standing in for everybody at home watching, basically.
Yeah, I was like, why are you in there? And then I realized, oh, wait, because he was going to do Hollywood's Bleeding later on, probably across the room from them.
Yep.
I guess. Or maybe he just really wanted to see it and popped inside. I don't know.
My final notes of the night, because that Miranda's the last person I got to speak to. I tried to ask a question of our friend Dua. She only took two questions. She was the last person and at the end of the night. But she also had great answers, especially about how many women won top awards this year. She had a great answer about that.
All the big four went to women this year, at least at least in partially. Like,
yes, there were writers involved in songs. Like, yes, but
Phineas produced the lead artist, Billy, but you know,
the lead artist.
Yeah, exactly.
And then we also talked to Harry Styles came back.
Did he talk?
He spoke, but he did not take questions.
Yeah,
he kind of gave like a second, you know, acceptance speech.
I saw that online, and I'm like, is that all you said? Did you not take questions? And yeah.
That's literally it. They told us ahead of time he's not going to take questions. I think I know that he dropped an F-bomb and had to be censored during his acceptance speech. And so I wondered if maybe that flustered him and he, you know, forgot to, like, thank somebody he had wanted to thank. And that's why he took that time backstage to, like, give one more, you know, heartfelt speech.
I wondered what happened because I was watching the show actually on my computer through CBS.com, completely authorized. truly, I mean, I some reason my cable box isn't working. Anyways, watching through the computer, and his audio went out for like a chunk of his speech, and I'm like, did he just say something that he shouldn't have? And then
it was the F word, and apparently internationally they didn't censor it, so his international fans on Twitter were just like, oh, he just said like F in this, like no big deal. So I wondered if that's why he came back, but it was nice to just like hear his earnest comments, especially to fans, after winning his first Grammy. I mean, you know, One Direction was never even nominated for a Grammy. This is his first Grammy ever. So it was cool. I mean, honestly, you know, kind of ideal for me. Like, I had about the same interaction I would have had with, you know, the musicians, and the same access. I just wasn't in the physical same room as them. So it was a cool experience, I thought. And, like the show itself, I think that the Recording Academy handled it really well. And I don't know, you watch most of the show, the bulk of the show. I know Billboard has given great reviews to the show. Did you have strong feelings about, you know, how they pulled it off?
Yeah, well, so you say, like, you watched some of the show. I'm like, I actually did see the whole thing. I started a little late, and then they replayed it afterwards. So I watched it out of order. But I kind of went into it not knowing about some of the performances at all. And so, like, when the In Memoriam tribute happened, I was like, there's Lionel Richie. I didn't know he was going to be here because I missed the top of the show where they said that he was going to be performing. And I'm like, oh, look, Brittany Howard. Didn't know. And look, it's Chris Martin with Brittany. Oh, that's cool. So kind of going into it a little bit cold was kind of fun because it was truly surprises to me.
Yeah.
And also, it did feel like, in general, most of the performances, unless they pulled a fast one on us, were actually happening yesterday at the show, Sunday.
I'm pretty sure everything but BTS happened in downtown Los Angeles.
But I wasn't sure, like, the really big production numbers, like the ones that were outside, or the Cardi and Megan one, because it was so theatrical, I thought, well, maybe they taped some of these elements.
But then Post is there.
Yeah, but they could.
And, like, Trevor comes up after and talks to Cardi.
They could have pre-taped that. I don't know.
I'm naive, though, so this always happens. I'm like, oh, they couldn't possibly have misled us.
The BTS performance, though, in my head, because they saved Dynamite, BTS's performance of Dynamite towards the very end of the show. It was the next to last performance. And in my head, I just assumed, oh, they have to be in Korea. They can't possibly be here. They started performing inside in the set that looked just like the Grammy set, with the flowers hanging, and it was the same backdrop. I'm like, well, that's interesting. I wonder, did they record it in advance? And it seemed live. And then the only thing that started to make me wonder, there's something wrong here, was when the camera started to follow them through hallways and through doors. And I'm like, all right, maybe some of this is taped. It kind of reminded me of like the Super Bowl when The Weeknd went inside. I'm like, okay, is this live? I don't know what's going inside. And then he pops back out. And then I'm like, all right, fine, whatever. But then it gets really confusing. Suddenly they're on the roof of a building. And I'm like, all right, well, I guess it is dark enough at night in LA. Could that be? But the first thing that immediately throws you off, the camera pulls back and you see a body of water behind the building. I'm like, okay, there's no water anywhere in downtown LA.
You're like, downtown Los Angeles is nowhere near the beach.
I'm like, and I kept looking at the skyline. I'm like, this is not recognizable. And then Trevor Noah says, hey, they fooled you. They rebuilt the entire set in Korea. And that was all taped in Korea. I'm like, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It's amazing.
I thought it was a great performance, too.
And they're like, yeah, take this, the rest of the other artists who are just like, yeah, can I just phone it in from home? It's like, no, you have to rebuild the set. But yeah, I mean, it was a really, I thought in general, it was a really enjoyable show. And I didn't mind necessarily not having an audience and panning to the crowd and cheering
people.
Well,
it's like the audience they did have was just chock full of A-listers. Like, you know, like we were looking at the audience and, you know, Jay and Beyonce are sitting up front. Taylor's at her table with like all of her folklore collaborators. You know, Harry was the guy that Harry hugged when he won. Was that Ben Winston who produced the show?
No, I think it was his manager, maybe.
Oh, it was his manager. Okay.
I'm like,
I wonder when I saw that.
If Ben Winston is being hugged by Harry at his table, then he's got a lot of other, he has nothing else better to do.
That's what I was thinking. Like, do you just have like an iPad at the table where you're producing this from?
You mentioned Beyonce, by the way. She won her 27th and 28th awards on Sunday night, and now she has the most wins among all women. She surpassed Alison Krauss, and I believe she also has the most wins among any singers.
Correct, and she tied Quincy Jones for most Grammys for a living artist.
And Beyonce just happened to be at the show.
Hey, they fooled me. Obviously, like we knew ahead of time that she had declined to perform. Harvey Mason actually told the LA Times that over the weekend. So we knew that we were not going to see her perform. So I think it was just a treat for her to be there. And then obviously the way things transpired that she was able to, you know, break that record and do it on stage was great.
You don't get Beyonce to show up unless... So, I mean, it made me suddenly start to have conspiracy theories in my brain of how they got Beyonce to show up.
I have a feeling that they told her, we will tell you by X time on Sunday whether it's worth your while to come here.
Because I think that someone knows who the winners are before the envelopes open.
Yeah, like the premiere ceremony, they know. I feel like they know during that area. But this is all completely just conjecture.
This is just conjecture.
I don't know.
We have no idea.
Yeah. Yes.
I thought, I'm like, because I did not expect her to be at the show, and only when they presented the rap song category, as the camera was panning across the cocktail tables with all of the nominees, the last table, I'm like, is that Beyonce? Is that Jay-Z with Beyonce? I'm like, what the hell? They're there? Oh, I'm like, well, then she has to be winning this award for Savage with Megan Thee Stallion, and she did.
And she did. And it
Amazing.
Was awesome.
Here's my theory, and then we can move on. Harvey Mason Jr., who is the interim CEO, I believe.
Yep.
And also had a moment during the telecast at the end where he spoke to the crowd about, or spoke to the viewers at home about the mission of the Recording Academy, and maybe some of the, alterations or corrections that they are going to make in their movement as they go forward. He is one half of the production team Underdogs, or was. And Underdogs produced all the music in the film Dreamgirls, in which Beyonce co-starred.
I did not know that.
So there's an interesting connection that the head of the Recording Academy and Beyonce have together.
Totally.
Yeah.
Thank you for that fun fact, Keith.
You know, I'm here for... I got nothing but fun facts. So
So next week's episode, we'll predict who's going to win the Grammys next year, everybody.
Adele and Ed Sheeran.
Yeah, okay. Good call.
Rihanna. Sure.
Sure.
All right. Well, now it's time for the chart stat of the week. And it's Quiz Katie time.
Oh, no.
So with Beyonce now officially the queen of the Grammy Awards with the most wins ever by a female artist, 28. Katie, can you name the first single Beyonce ever charted with on the Billboard charts that was credited to her as a solo artist and not to her group Destiny's Child?
Okay. I've got follow-up questions. Okay. Can it be a collaboration?
Nope. Well, yes, can be. Yes, it can be. That would still be technically her name as the artist. Yeah.
Okay. So my guess then is, what is it? 03 Bonnie and Clyde with Jay-Z. So I remember when, we're doing Billboard charts, period.
Yes.
See, I was thinking Hot 100 because I remember she had her Austin Powers song by herself. Is that the one?
Can you name this track that you speak of?
Yep, I'm coming. I'm coming with it. I just remember that song not doing particularly well, and I don't think it ever hit the Hot 100. Work It Out?
That is correct. Work It Out from the movie Woo-hoo! Austin Powers in Gold Member, in which she co-starred with Mike Myers as the character Foxy Cleopatra.
Yes.
Now, the track didn't reach the Hot 100 or most of our charts, but it did hit the Hot Dance Club Songs chart, peaking at number 11 on the September 14th, 2002 dated chart. Her next charting hit is probably more familiar, and it was Katie's first guest, 03 Bonnie and Clyde.
Because that was on the Hot 100, right?
Oh, yeah. It was. So it's a Jay-Z song that features Beyoncé. It debuted on the charts later that year and sailed to number 4 on the Hot 100 and number 5 on the Hot R&B Hip Hop Songs chart. So,
I'm taking this as a win.
Yeah, sort of. So there you have it.
There.
A little chart history about the queen of the Grammys, Beyoncé, and her very first solo hit on the Billboard charts. You gotta work it out. We've reached the end of our big shoe. And again, we had a longer than normal show.
It's always Grammys. Well, you know, when we can't talk to each other, we talk. This is what happens.
This is what happens. We don't sit next to one another, and we get to virtually sit next to one another once a week on this show.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very thankful for it.
Same.
Sadly, though, our streak that we had, our hot streak with our annual Grammy Awards preview guest.
Oh,
Harry Connick Jr.
Harry,
did not win this year. He lost
James Taylor.
But
with another
friend
podcast.
It's all right. We went 2 years. We had Phineas last year and Casey Musgraves the year before. They both won.
Yep.
So
listen, we can't do it all.
So if we come to you next year and ask you to be on the show, don't hold this against us.
Yeah. And we're sorry, Harry.
We're sorry, Harry. Katie still loves you dearly.
I do. And James Taylor did not pop into the Zoom press room. So
I was kind of surprised that Lady Gaga and Ariana Grande weren't there either when they won for Best Pop Duo Collaboration.
Ariana was trying to like wake Gaga up to tell her that they won.
True. She was somewhere in Italy. Yeah. All right. So what song should we go out on, Katie?
Oh, my gosh. Maybe some more like old school Beyonce.
Sure. Did you want like an old school Destiny's Child song?
Well, I was going to say, I guess it's not that old school. I was going to say Crazy in Love, her first proper solo single from her debut album.
Yes, and her first number one on the Billboard Hot 100 chart.
Even better.
All right, see you guys next time.
Bye. Looking so crazy in love, coming, looking, coming, looking so crazy in love.